Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for this weekend's edition, also your host throughout the week. And one happy thing that I can report from at least my family life is that we did welcome my new son to the world on March 1st. So if you hear any squawking in the background, that just might be him. Very exciting time for our family, and also a very exciting time for all the precious metals bugs that listen to the show, because on that day and the follow through early on in this last week, we have seen precious metals continue to move higher and a wide range of the stocks get a bounce off some pretty washed out levels. But that gives us a lot to talk about throughout the week and on this weekend show. On this weekend show, we're featuring two of our more generalist commentators, but with a focus on how they're playing the precious metals and a lot of other areas that are at all-time highs. Chatting right now with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, as I said, let's start off with precious metals, gold breaking two all-time highs in the face of a lot of other sectors at all-time highs. Let's start with gold here. What do you think of this breakout, Mike, and how much higher could gold be going?
Well, geez, I feel like the obvious thing to say first is congratulations to you and your family. Very happy for you. The second thing I was going to say is I pretty much have to credit you for the breakout here, right? I mean, you timed the birth and the gold move here perfectly. So thank you for that, for all the gold bugs out there.
Yeah, hey, my pleasure. We can thank Buster for that, but I'm sure we'll hear from him a little bit later in the show.
No, I'll tell you, I mean, we were joking in previous conversations when I've been on the show that it's sort of been like a waiting for Godot environment. A lot of the ingredients have been coming together, in my opinion, for a bull market in precious metals, whether that's the sideways to down move in the dollar ever since 2022's rip higher, whether it's that the Fed has been pivoting from a tightening stance to a sideways and this year cutting stance, you know, whether it was just investors looking for sort of the next asset that has sat out a bull market and is likely to run. There are a lot of reasons behind why gold and silver and precious metals should have started running, but it was frustrating for a while there. You and I, people on the show, counseled patience, and you know what? Patience is being rewarded. This is the version of waiting for Godot, the play where at the end of it, Godot actually shows up. So that's nice to see. I think what's encouraging in the short term is that we've been banging away at that overhead resistance in the gold market for a while, failed a couple of times, you know, tried to break through, failed, tried to break through again, failed. But the pullbacks were pretty shallow. It wasn't like, you know, gold pulled back $200, $300 after failing to break out. It was more mild. That was an encouraging sign. And now, you know, we're seeing follow through. So a breakout's great, but if it lasts for a day or two, that, you know, that's not necessarily a confirmed one. But what we're seeing here is not just a breakout that's holding. We're also seeing extending. So I think that it's encouraging technical action. The fundamentals have been lining up for a while. And, you know, I think this move runs. I think this is the start. You know, we've sort of been in that seventh inning stretch of the baseball game for a long time. You know, they kept singing and singing and we didn't get back to play. But now we are. And I think that this move is going to be one of the signature moves that we'll see in 2024.
Well, Mike, just sticking with that analogy of the seventh inning stretch and everybody singing, we finally get back to the game here. Does that mean that there's only two innings left? And the reason I ask the question that way is there are some people that think we've been running in the gold market sporadically and kind of haphazardly since 2016 when it bottomed, or 2015, the end of the year in December, and that it's essentially doubled, gotten stuck, bumping its head on 2000, finally breaking out. There's other people that think the new secular bull market in gold is just now starting and that it has this long time frame. How are you seeing it in the bigger picture?
Sure. I mean, I started getting bullish on metals. I mean, as Corey said at the beginning, I'm not a gold bug per se. There's times when I like the metal, times when I don't, and times where I'm just looking at other parts of the market for opportunities, you know. But if there's a bull market, I'm going to play it and I'm going to lean in. And I think I kind of looked at the start of this bull market in the second half of 2018. I would probably more appropriately call this maybe the fifth inning stretch that we just got out of, because I think we're probably only about halfway through this move overall. I think, again, and a big part of that is the pivot in the monetary policy backdrop and the currency, and the fact that gold's got some catching up to do. And let's be honest. I mean, a lot of money has been flowing into crypto, Bitcoin, things like that as a result of, you know, the big run there and the fact that the SEC approved those spot ETFs for trading in the US. And that's getting all the press, and rightfully so. It's a big deal. But I think what's really stands out to me is the quiet nature of this gold bull. I don't see news stories all over and everybody yelling from the rooftops, hey, look, gold's breaking out, which I think is from a different standpoint, a sentiment standpoint, actually encouraging for the longer term. Everybody wants to talk crypto. And you know, you've seen the big inflows to crypto ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs. You've actually seen outflows from things like GLD. But what's happening? Gold's rallying anyway. So that tells you, you know, the late money, the bullish, extreme bullish retail sentiment, we're nowhere near that in the gold space, which is another thing that I think is encouraging from a, you know, will this move last standpoint.
Let's also talk about GDX and GDXJ, because look, gold has really just been knocking on these all-time highs for almost 3-4 years now. 2020 was the big run up to almost 2100, then it tested it again in 2022, and then tested in 2023 a couple of times, and now has broken out. The thing is, the gold stocks have continued to sell off. Back in 2020, gold stocks were about almost 50% higher, looking at something like GDX, than they are now. So how do you understand this lack of correlation here, where gold has stayed strong and the stocks have continued to get cheaper?
You know, I think some of it is just, again, you know, your portfolio managers, the modern guys are looking for sort of tech plays and what's going to be hot and how to play the new and exciting thing, crypto and all of its sort of tie-ins, AI and so on. I think part of it has just been, you know, overcoming the narrative. It hasn't been exciting. It hasn't had momentum. It hasn't had, you know, technical strength to correlate. And the underlying commodity has just been moving sideways. I think now, again, that's where you're going to see, I think, in this case, a real powerful move there as people realize, you know, hey, what's happening in some of these more exciting parts of the market are great. But, you know, the fund managers have just been sort of ignoring a sector of the market that hasn't done anything, start having to educate themselves and get interested again, and big money gets involved. So I think that sort of process, once this breakout not only holds but extends, then you're going to see people say, gosh, you have this relatively, in terms of, you know, relative to the overall markets and other sectors that are huge in terms of market cap and market dominance, like tech and so on. They're going to say, geez, you got this small corner of the market that's been ignored for so long. If I wait until it becomes popular again, I'm going to miss out on a lot of upside momentum. So I think you're going to see money flowing there. And I think that it's just, it's starting now. And again, as this move confirms and extends and gains a little bit of momentum, then you're going to see people start to pile in.
Well, Mike, since you do follow such a wide swath of markets, I want to pull on the string a little bit further of the cryptocurrency space versus the speculative side of the gold space, which is the mining stocks. We've had some animosity in both camps, where there's people at the precious metals level hurling rocks at the crypto people, and vice versa, the crypto hodlers, calling them boomer rocks back at the gold people. There are people in the middle, though, that are pragmatic and look at them both as very similar markets. But there's been the notion that the crypto space has been stealing that speculative flow of funds from the mining stocks, which maybe would have gone there in years past when the crypto space didn't exist. Can they coexist? Do you think some crypto people will eventually get into the mining stocks? Or has the market substantially changed now that the cryptoverse has been created over the last dozen years or so?
Look, I think the best advice or thing I would say here is, hey, why can't we all get along, right? It's been this market where it's been either or, but I think since we had the huge run-up in crypto and the crypto crash a few years ago, and that led to all the fraudsters kind of being flushed out of the system, all the garbage, all the people that were, you know, just sort of hangers-on and glomming onto that move and scamming people out of their money, you know, you had the huge boom and run-up and crash, and now you're in what I think on the crypto side is a more sustainable, let's look through the survivors, let's see how we, now this asset's being sort of more institutionalized, how we can profit and so on. So I think that we're probably on the crypto side, I think this is more of a lasting move, whereas I basically sat out most of what we had before because it looked a lot like a dot-com boom and bust, housing boom and bust, and so on. In the wake of both of those busts, what happened? You cleaned out a lot of the garbage, a lot of the lousy home builders went broke, a lot of the money-losing dot-coms went broke, but there ultimately became an industry and an ecosystem and investments that survived that became very profitable for people who got in after the wreck. I think that's probably what you're seeing in crypto. And as for the gold side, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't have to be an either or, especially as it gets more institutionalized. I think you're going to see traditionalists that are still going to stick with gold. It's been there for a couple thousand years, you know, slightly longer history than Bitcoin's been around. So I think that you're going to have the traditionalists. And I think if it gains some momentum, I think what you might actually see, ironically enough, as if, you know, Bitcoin after this run up maybe stalls out after it breaks out to a new high and goes through some of the sideways chop that gold did, some of the momentum players are going to say, well, you know, these are starting to move together, but what hasn't moved up already a lot versus what has moved up already a lot. And so I think you would, ironically enough, you might see some momentum money start to pile into gold if Bitcoin just kind of, I guess, chop sideways for a while. So that's how I sort of see the interplay between those two groups. But again, I think they can coexist. I think that the pie overall is growing, especially given the mainstream money, the institutional money, the advisor money, and things like that, that will start to flow into crypto now that it's got that sort of institutional stamp of approval. So, you know, we can all grow.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, too. There's a lot going for crypto right now. A lot of good news has come out recently, but hey, there is still the gold bug community that loves to hate on crypto. Fact of the matter is, as you said, crypto looks like it's going to be around for a while. So better off just accept it and embrace it rather than fight it. But look, this translates over to a lot of other sectors at all-time highs. The broad averages, S&P, NASDAQ, those are at all-time highs. And that's even without the Magnificent Seven simply carrying the torch here. So this whole environment that we are seeing seems very much like a broad-based, more risk-on rally. What's your takeaway from this environment where we have gold, Bitcoin, and the broad averages at all-time highs?
This has always been a market that if it doesn't broaden out, if it didn't broaden out, I should say, we're going to ultimately have a problem, right? You can't just have a handful of stocks running and nobody else participating forever and ever. It's interesting, this year, you've seen the Mag 7 sort of thin out. Tesla's dropped behind. Apple just broke down. You know, some of the Mag 7 names have faded, but what's happened? The overall averages have held up. And, you know, in the last 3 months or so, the returns on the IWM are about equal to the returns on the XLK. In other words, small caps and tech over about a 90-day period are roughly in line, tech's beating it by a percentage point or two. And what does that tell you, especially as you see, you know, financials, you see transport, you see some of these other groups, industrials. Industrials are one of the sort of hidden gems over the last few months here that have done very well. So you add it all up and you say, look, this is a market, and some of the experts, I will say too, some of the technicians like Ralph Acampora and Craig Johnson that we had at the Las Vegas Money Show and some of the others I've spoke to, Craig actually said this is going to be a market where it goes from Mag 7 to Lag 7, but the overall averages and other groups make up for it. So I tend to agree with that. I think one of the big stories this year is going to be broadening, better breadth and so on, and people making money in other sectors. I don't think tech crashes or anything. I think it might just kind of get left behind and chop around while these other sectors pick up that torch. So again, you know, I don't want to sound Pollyanna-ish, but a lot of the things that I started to see almost a year and a half ago, or more than a year ago, align for a bullish outlook, haven't sort of disappeared or got, you know, reversed. It's gotten better. So I think in that scenario, you know, you can always come up for excuses to sell stocks or not own them or not buy or whatever. But I think you got to look at it from a sort of a clear-headed way as possible and say, look, there's things that really argue for a strong year, a great year. Keith Fitzgerald at our event actually said he thinks this could be a year for the record books. I don't know that I'd go that far, but, you know, I got a lot of reasons to be optimistic here.
Well, Mike, since you do talk to so many people at the Money Show and you get such a range of ideas and input from experts there, are there any sectors under the surface, like you mentioned, the small caps doing better, or even industrials were doing better in a stealth rally? Are there any other segments of the market that you heard about or that people have flagged that it could be a contrarian place to keep riding up some strength that are being overlooked right now?
Well, again, you know, here's financials, right? I mean, you've heard probably the news that New York Community Bank, another one of these super regionals or regionals, that got in trouble with commercial real estate lending and the stocks tanking and so on. But unlike when you had those banks out in California and otherwise out west that were tanking and failing, guess what the XLF, the financial ETF's done? In the last 90 days, it's up 13%. Okay, is 13% up as much as the AI stocks? No, it's not. But it's that kind of stuff. You look at industrials, 13.5%. I mean, you know, these are respectable runs, and not only are they respectable runs, they're ones where these sectors aren't giving back much, even when tech, you know, stumbles and so on. So I think things that align with a soft landing to even potentially a reaccelerating type economy later in the year and as we roll into 2025, those are the kinds of things that I think look really strong. I think that have great prospects. So from a market cap standpoint, it would be small over large. From a sector, it might be transports, industrials, and financials over just big tech. So those are some of the areas that I'm looking at, and I think probably are pretty attractive for this year.
Yeah, to your point, look at XLF. It's back pretty much at all-time highs too. So this is an environment that, boy, oh boy, there's a lot of money coming into the system. To that point, though, let's look at something like the U.S. dollar, which has been generally flat. And look, if the dollar moves down, money can rotate into markets. However, again, this dollar's been mostly range-bound throughout 2023, 2024. How important is it for investors to watch the dollar in this more just generally bullish risk-on environment?
Sure. Well, when you and I used to talk months and months ago, I described the dollar as a governor on the engine for precious metals and other commodities. Basically, you know, it's not the end all and be all that totally dominates what happens with metals and commodities. But it is something that if they have other bullish factors going for them, and that you'd like to think the engine could rev up, unfortunately, the rising dollar, and especially in 2022, the surging dollar acted as a governor. It kept the engine from revving. You know, and obviously the dollar is down from its peak in 2022, but as you noted, it's been chopping sideways for a few quarters here. Just getting a sideways motion is now, you know, essentially allowing gold to break out and silver and so on. So I think you don't need the dollar to crash to ignite or drive this next bull leg in gold. You just need it to basically get out of the way. And I think that's what we're seeing. So again, you know, dollar downside would help commodities sort of, you know, the opposite of the governor, maybe turbocharge the move a little bit. But I don't think you necessarily need that for another bull leg here. You just need it to get out of the way.
Well, Mike, talking about the dollar as a governor makes me think of the teeter-totter market we had for a couple of years where it was really a story about the dollar and interest rates. If the dollar and interest rates were up, everything was down. And if the dollar and interest rates were down, everything was up. Now some of those correlations have broken down and even the dollar and interest rates are moving separately. So how are you looking at the bond market now and the interest rate market?
Yeah, I mean, again, I just think that when it comes to rates here, the Fed, even in testimony this week from Jay Powell, basically confirmed we're probably going to cut rates. That's our base case scenario. They did obviously push back on the idea it's going to happen at the March meeting or, you know, earlier than that back in January. But I think that, you know, the market's pretty convinced we're going to get a couple of rate cuts this year. And I think that that's right. I mean, I didn't look at the pricing yet today, but I mean, you know, we went from pricing and I think it was about 6 rate cuts at the peak when people were most bullish on the idea of rate cuts. And now it's more like, you know, 4-ish, depending on which day you're looking at the futures markets. And I think that's pretty consistent. Yeah. Like as we're talking, I mean, the funds market's looking for maybe, you know, a most likely scenario of a 4% to 4.25% funds rate by this time next year. So, you know, we're at that 5.25-ish range and, you know, do the math. So I think that you can see that it's a market that's getting more comfortable with the idea that we're going to get cuts, you know, and that gradual reduction as inflation gradually comes down, as some of the rent and housing impact that's been, you know, working the way the government does the numbers, has been working to keep core inflation higher, despite the fact real-time rental indicators are moving lower. All that's going to work its way through the system, which leads to gradual declines in interest rates. And again, a nice bullish backdrop for assets like gold.
Can we take a look back here, Mike, in terms of any times in history where you have noticed a similar environment here where markets at all-time highs, precious metals at all-time highs, and overall, it just seems like everything is quite bullish out there?
You know, it's a unique environment. Yes, it is. And of course, in past whatever environments where you had a soft landing or whatever you want to call it, you didn't even have assets like Bitcoin that existed, really. So I think, you know, every scenario is different. Every market's different. I'll admit, I was wrong about the Fed. I thought they were going to give us a hard landing versus a soft. But if we're truly going to come in for that soft landing scenario, I mean, look, the market ripped and after the 94 and early 95 cycle was done. I think that's probably why some of the people like Keith are talking about maybe a year for the record books. And I think even, you know, you're going to have pockets of where the markets get overextended and sentiment gets, you know, exuberant, if not irrationally so. I mean, obviously stocks in the AI sector, for example, have been ripping. You know, it's just sometimes that can get out of control or whatever. I don't necessarily think we're there now. But broadly speaking, I don't see excessive exuberance. I don't see, you know, people, you know, the shoeshine guy, you know, giving stock tips. I don't see people bragging all over social media that how much money they're making, you know, kind of like we have with the meme stock run up and crash. It seems like more of a healthy, broadening, fundamentally and technically supported move. And when you have all that going, why would you fight it? I just don't think it's the right time. I don't see anything imminent or even in the short to intermediate term that's going to change the dynamic. So, you know, ride it is my advice. Be bold.
Well, Mike, in the spirit of being bold, I do want to at least give a small amount of airtime to people that have the bearish side of the argument. We've heard for years that we're going to have a recession that never came. We did have a pullback in 2022 in the markets of 20% to 30% in a lot of the indexes, but there's been people expecting a secular bear market in the general stock market that doesn't seem like it's anywhere close. There's people that have been looking for economic contraction when GDP keeps expanding. Has the recession officially been called off for good? Has the bear market in the equity markets been called off for good? Is there anything out there that the bears have to latch onto? Or are we really setting up for, as you say, a year for the record books?
Look, I think we're seeing, you know, the labor market, some of the data that's been out recently decelerate. So I think if deceleration turns into declining, that's going to be an issue. I think if we get big geopolitical surprises of some sort, that's always, you know, kind of a black swan looming in the background. And let's hope for the world's sake and our sake, it doesn't happen. If you see the selling in the Mag 7 group, instead of it being a healthy rotation, turn into a, oh my gosh, get me out of these names, I'm losing too much money, and you know, accelerates, that would be a negative. Those are some of the things that I guess if I had to say, what are the most likely things that can derail this would. But again, you know, that's not what I expect. That's what it's certainly able to watch for. I guess the other thing I would throw out is, you know, there's going to be difficulty in parts of the banking and credit markets. I mean, the CRE, commercial real estate issues, loan losses, buildings losing value. I mean, that's real. That's happening. But unlike the 07 to 09 cycle in housing, the way these loans are made, the way the market's functioning, it's more of sort of a slow burn in the background where certain institutions have issues, certain people lose money, but you don't have the forced liquidation selling that brings down the financial system because the structure of all the lending and securities that are not like they were back in that time. So, you know, if I turn out to be wrong there, fine. You get some credit worries that spread, and instead of having a handful of banks that overdid themselves and a handful of private investors that overdid themselves, you know, lose money in real estate, I suppose you could see a banking crisis develop out of that. But again, that's not what I expect. I mean, you know, I've been following the financial and bank, you know, banking markets, lending markets for a quarter century now, and it just seems like a different animal. And I certainly, as opposed to in the mid 2000s when I said, no, don't listen to that well-contained garbage. This is going to be a disaster.
All right. Enough said, Mike. Great chatting with you. Thank you very much for taking us through your thoughts on the markets. Again, Mike is the editor-in-chief at Money Show. I will post a link to the company's website so you can find out about the upcoming conferences that the Money Show puts on. Mike, great chatting with you this weekend. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, guys. You too.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.